I'm Bill DeYoung, and this is the Arts Alive podcast from the St. Pete Catalyst. Just released, just published, I guess you'd say, is The Everlasting Life of Charlie Wall, which is the second novel from today's guest, Paul Wilburn. It's his third book. Hello, Paul.
Bill, good to see you.
The Everlasting Life of Charlie Wall is a brilliantly done blend of fact and fiction. It is about a real guy who lived in Tampa, lived in Ybor City, and was kind of the mob king in the 30s and 40s with the Belita games and all sorts of other unscrupulous things. He was a real fellow. Mr. Wilburn took it from there, and so I'm going to just let you take it from here and tell people essentially the story of the book.
Well, Bill, as usual, I researched a whole different book. Because I don't...
Didn't you do that the first time?
I don't know.
With Florida Hustle?
I don't know. You know, I'm a real seat-of-the-pants writer. Mm-hmm. I like to see where the characters and the story takes me. But I had researched a different book that, believe it or not, was about an NFL franchise like the Bucks in the 80s. I won't say any more than that because it...
Because maybe the next
one. It may be the next book. I don't know.
Right, right.
But in that plot, I had a detective coming up from South Florida to Tampa, and he needed a place to live. And he rents a room from this old mob guy in Ybor City. And I wrote that scene, and that mob guy just spoke to me, and suddenly the whole book that I researched went out the window. That detective never showed up. It just became about Charlie, but also about Tripp, his driver. Mm-hmm. It's really – Tripp's really the protagonist. Charlie's sort of the main, secondary main character.
Well, did you know who Charlie Wall was – before you started all this?
Oh, yeah.
Because you're from Hillsborough.
I'm from Tampa. I grew up, and my family were Sicilians. You know, they weren't in the mafia, but they knew the mafia. Mm-hmm. And I never met Charlie because he died when I was barely born. Mm-hmm. But my mom had actually met his wife when she was a little girl, my mom was a little girl. But Charlie's legendary, and you heard about him. And I have a friend who has since passed on, John Barry, who was a really top lawyer in town. And he represented a lot of mob figures quietly. He didn't have the high profile of a Regano. Yeah. But he told the story of Charlie Wall being in his office with another guy drinking in the afternoon. And Charlie says to that guy, you know, remember that election of 34? You drove up Cass Street instead of you drove Kennedy instead of up Cass Street. And I said, I guess maybe I did. He said, well, I know you did because I had someone waiting at Cass Street to shoot you.
Wow.
That was Tampa. And it really, to me, Charlie... It says so much because he was from the rich side of town. He was a black sheep of a very wealthy family.
He was, yes, that's right. And the stories of him sort of sneaking out, and we'll get into that. But you know, he didn't like his stepmother when his precious mother died. How much of that was real?
Even though I fictionalized the mother a bit and the stepmother, he really did take a shot at his stepmother. The mother did die. So all that stuff is based on fact, but I fictionalized a lot of the scenes, and I made her a Southern Baptist, and because I was raised Southern Baptist, and that whole scene of at the river of him getting baptized, mm-hmm. where Charlie takes the idea of everlasting life literally.
Yeah.
So
wow. So what we're seeing here is the product of a fertile mind, a fertile imagination, taking some real things that happened, and as I said before, running with them. Charlie, we should point out, started out as a Belita kingpin. And explain to the folks at home what Belita is. I assume it still goes on in some corners.
Well, I think what you call Belita now is called the Florida Lottery. That's what, you know, all those balls jumping around in there. It's just a different version.
People like to spend their nickels and dream.
For many years in the early 20th century in Tampa, Belita was called – Belita's a Cuban term for little balls, believe it or not, because these were
– Which could also refer to Charlie when you
– They put 100 little balls in a velvet bag, and each was a number. And they would do a throw, that meaning they tossed the bag among several people.
Right.
The last catcher would grab it and grab one of the balls. They'd cut that ball out, and that was the winner.
They literally cut it out of the bag.
Cut it out of the bag.
Yeah.
In the old days. I don't know if that continued forever.
Yeah. But, seems like they're wasting a lot of velvet bags.
A lot of velvet bags.
You're right.
But that's how it was described to me in all the research. So Charlie saw there were a lot of little games going around. I mean, when my mom in the 20s was in her crib, and they kept her in the crib way too long. She was like 4 years old. And she said a number to somebody, and it hit. And she said she remembers people lining up outside to say, kid, say a number. They thought she was lucky.
Wow.
And so Belita was everywhere. Everybody played it from rich to poor, and the Bolita Man came to your door, and the cops looked the other way pretty much.
That was Charlie's whole shtick, was honoring, you know, his debts. And right. he got a great reputation amongst the community members for, you know, not welching, not being became a tough guy. But his Bolita stuff was as honest as you could be on the other side of the law, I suppose.
He paid off. He paid off. And he said, you know, like, you're only as good as, you know, your reputation, and you got to pay off. And because people will then keep coming back. And so he always paid off. And he eventually moved into other things because one of the points in the book is Tampa was the wildest, most corrupt city in America, you could argue, bar none, for most of the 20th century. And that's a story that gets told in this book, too.
And was Ybor City like the soft white underbelly of Tampa, or is that stretching it?
Well, I think the soft white underbelly of Tampa was maybe the Palmacia, all that area. Ybor City was where it all the action happened. Ybor City was, at that point with cigar industry and other things, was the economic driver of Tampa.
Right.
So, but Tampa was run by what they called then white people, and white people were not Hispanic. They were not Spaniards. They were not Cubans. They were not Italians. They were cracker-type white people. They mm-hmm. were, and so all of this stuff was happening in Ybor, and Charlie was the perfect guy to go between them because Charlie was a white person mm-hmm. from a wealthy family. He could call the mayor. He could call the county commission. He could call the sheriff and get an appointment and come in and slide an envelope across the table and do business.
Okay, Charlie Wall died in 1955.
Right.
I mean, I'm not giving anything away,
no
folks.
Secret
that's,
there.
That's fact, and it's stated in the book at the end. You decided, that didn't happen. I mean, tell me how this, in your fertile imagination, developed.
Honestly, I really wanted to tell a story of an older guy grappling with not just mortality, but the loss of importance. You know, I think
that's irrelevance.
Irrelevance.
I think we all think about that. Yeah.
It's maybe becoming more apparent to me as I get a little older, that idea of the world has passed you by and mm-hmm. you were the king. I mean, Charlie was the king. And so, and when he died, he was a little bit on the downside. He had given up most of his business by 55, but his murder was never solved, and a lot of people have speculated about it. So I just joined in the speculation. But in my case, I just let him survive it. And then it's 1985. The book happens in 85, and I make him 85 years old. He would have been about 110, really, but I make him 85.
Yeah, I saw that. He was born in, what, 1880
years?
Yeah, I
make him 85 years old.
Well, you can do that.
That's fiction, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. So you develop this into, okay, I got this guy. He ain't dead. He's going to grapple with, mortality and the loss of his importance in the place. But where did you come up with the rest of it? His chauffeur is a young man named Trip Armstrong, who is a character in himself. I knew nothing about mushrooms. Still don't. I only know what I read in your book.
I did a lot of research, Bill.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I'm glad you did it. I didn't have to do it.
In college.
So Trip hires on as Charlie's bodyguard. That's safe to say. That's how the book starts. We learn a lot about Trip, who's also the black sheep of a relatively wealthy family. So they have that in common.
Right.
Charlie's very eccentric. But where did you come up with these people? And I made a list, okay? I made a list of the characters. I wrote Trip, and then I wrote Buster Maniscalco. Maniscalco, okay. Buster, who is another aging gangster. There's no secrets here. I mean, there's no spoilers.
No spoilers here.
No spoilers here, folks. I loved Ava. It's like I wish I had an Ava in my life.
I loved Ava.
Where did this story come from? I mean, did you just see all kinds of possibilities where this can go? Is that how that works?
Well, I knew that Charlie Wall grew up in Tampa Heights, which was then the best neighborhood in Tampa, mm-hmm. and that there was a family, the Corral family,
right.
Were cigar owners. And in Tampa, then as in today, it was not so much your ethnicity as how much money you had and how successful you were.
Mm.
So the Corrals were actually a family that were in Gasparilla and in society. And so I could see them living next door.
Mm.
Ava is a completely made up character. And the relationship with Charlie is completely made up. But mm-hmm. I have them growing up next door and being friends and then young lovers.
Yeah.
But Ava can never be with Charlie because he's chosen the dark side. And so that relationship goes on through the book. And so it's like take some real stuff and then take it and have fun with it. Buster is a completely manufactured character.
Yeah.
But somebody had to kill Charlie and back in the day. Somebody had to shoot at him. And in my book, Buster is the guy who failed, and it's the one thing he failed at.
I think those scenes are among my favorite, the scenes in Our Lady where Buster is meeting – Angie is her name, right? The internal monologue in Buster's head is fascinating.
He's not the brightest bulb.
He's just a big old mob hit guy from the old days, you know, and so yeah, you must have had fun with that. Larry was another great character, the guy who drives the van for the old folks home.
Yeah, and Larry was again based on a real guy that I knew who, and to me in Tampa in those days there were a lot of guys like this. They were 50-year-old bachelors.
Mm.
They lived with their mothers. They were no doubt gay, but they didn't ever act on it. And they were this guy I knew was. He wrote movie reviews for La Gazzetta, and he worked at a print place and was just a lovely, lovely man.
Mm-hmm.
But he still lived with mom. And, you know, that was sort of how it happened in that – especially in the Hispanic community.
Becomes a gumshoe. I love that bit. Just see, I literally just finished it last night before we're talking here this morning. Just the whole scenes with him, like, thinking he's Humphrey Bogart and put on a trench coat and a fedora that's slightly too large.
Because he's lived in watching TV, so he loves film noir. So he actually becomes a film noir guy. And, you know, that stuff's funny, but it's funny in the fact that it comes out of character. You know, that character, you could see him doing that, I hope.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I've probably known a few people like that in my life. And they're always really nice people, just a little on the strange side. You know, I guess. Oh, who's the guy who – Buster's roommate? I've forgotten him.
Oh, the roommate who teaches him how to do stuff?
Yeah.
The roommate, Seymour.
Seymour.
Buster breaks – you know, wants to finish the job with Charlie, and he goes to the old safe house in Ybor where he once hid out.
Yeah.
And because it was North Ybor, it's empty.
And Seymour's in there.
And he breaks in. he's actually sitting on the porch, and he thinks no one's there, but Seymour has squatted in there. And Seymour is this eccentric – genius, I don't know. You don't know what's true or what's not true about Seymour.
I saw him in my mind. He sort of looked like a really small, skinny Unabomber.
I think he's got that Unabomber potential.
With wild hair. And
right, wild hair. He's missing some teeth. You know, Buster says, don't bite me. He says, I can't bite you. He shows him his gums. You know, but he claims he went to Princeton. He claims he was part of, you know, the Manhattan Project. He was in the Vietnam and the claims he can become invisible. But he actually lives up to some things. You know, he goes out and helps Buster with this project and brings back shoes and things.
And something to sleep on and a little lamp.
And he starts cleaning. Anyway.
Yeah. And he just becomes like subservient to Buster, who generally has no idea what's going on. And it's actually very, very funny, folks. It is called The Everlasting Life of Charlie Wall. It is now published by our good friends at St. Petersburg Press. You have a whole lot of – let's talk about your book events that are coming up here. I have them written down. Let me see if I got them right. May the 8th, you're at a place called Café Contampa.
Café Contampa is a great little community thing. It's a morning thing with breakfast, and it's in downtown Tampa at the Portico, and it's been going on for years, and it's kind of a – people get up and give talks. So
oh, yeah.
It's nice.
Book and Bottle, May the 12th.
Book and Bottle. I'm going to be hanging out for 2 hours, happy hour. So come down, and we'll be signing books. And I don't know if it's not really a talk. It's more of a hangout.
Oh, yeah. That's the 12th. And on the 17th, you're back at the Oxford Exchange.
Oxford Exchange. I think a real book talk. And my wife is going to read some excerpts.
And on May 28th, the St. Petersburg Museum of History.
That's right. Rui, I did the last book there.
Yeah.
But this one really is there's a lot of history in this book. I consulted with Gary Mormino and a lot of other people. And so this really fits, and hopefully we'll do something at the Tampa History Center as well.
Did you work with Scott? Is it DG? Did you work with Scott?
I did work with Scott on the book, but Scott and I are buddies.
Yeah.
And when I was doing research for the book, his Cigar City Mafia was a good companion. Yes. What people forget, you know, that Tampa's cleaned up its act, was that Tampa had open gambling, open houses of prostitution on Franklin Street in downtown, in Ybor City. You could just walk in and all that stuff was there. And the cops looked the other way because everybody was taking an envelope. The joke in Ybor City was all the cops had sore necks from looking the other way.
Wow.
And Charlie also owned four precincts in West Tampa, and he, if people were taking his envelope, he wanted to make sure they got reelected. And so he controlled elections. You know, we don't have corrupt elections today. We had them then. They were very corrupt. There's a great
Ferdy. We don't.
We what? Don't. Well, let me. You know.
What?
There's a great Ferdy Pacheco painting in City Hall, and it's this crazy scene in downtown Tampa with a couple of guys in military uniform and all these people with signs for a mayor's race. And he said, "The election of 1934, when the National Guard was called out to guarantee every Tampa citizen's right to vote twice."
Who knew that Tampa? Who knew that Tampa was a cesspool of corruption?
Totally.
I thought of something while you were talking there a minute ago. Was there any thought in your mind of like, this is so fascinating that I'm going to take it another direction and just write a purely historical book about Charlie Wall? Or did Scott do it? Has it been done? Is there a correct history of what he did out there?
Tesla Haynes written about him. Ace Atkins has written about him. Lori Roy has written about him. A lot of people have put Charlie in various things. There's a book called The White Shadow. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of history books where Charlie is very prominent. I just was not interested in doing that. What I wanted to do was create this living, breathing character that I could have talk. And, you know, one historic thing that was really interesting to me was I wrote the thing and Charlie kind of talks like a gangster.
Yeah.
And I let Gary Mormino, the historian, read it. And Gary said, you know, Paul, Charlie was a gentleman. He didn't really curse. And so you – in the book, Charlie never curses. He makes up his own.
Oh, I remember. Curses. Gall darn it.
Yeah. And Dalmatian.
It's funny that you mention that because in the parts of the book that are in italics, which is Charlie's own narrative,
history, right.
he's very eloquent. You know, right. It's not really even the way he talks. And I thought there was something to that, that, you know, he really was very intelligent, wasn't he?
Very smart guy. And, you know, if he hadn't been a mobster, he could have been anything.
Yeah.
He was that smart. He just didn't want to go down the path of his parents. And the same with Tripp, my main character.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, come up three or four generations later, what would be the dark side for that generation? And he'd be a pot. He'd be a drug dealer. You know, that to me, that was it.
There's such a parallel there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just that's what was happening. And so – and he's never a hard drug dealer. He sells pot and mushrooms and does pretty well, but he wants to clean up his act. He really is trying to go straight.
Maybe I'll cut this part out. I don't but I was thinking about the scene wherein Charlie finds the mushroom juice in the refrigerator, and that must have been really fun to write.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like Chekhov says, you know, you bring the gun out, it's going to have to go off sometime.
Yeah.
For some reason I had Tripp give up everything else, but he leaves one jar of magic mushroom juice.
Just in case, because
it's worth a couple $100.
Yeah.
And he says, not for human consumption. And I just knew somehow Charlie had to get into that. And, you know, Charlie did just about everything else in the world. He actually fought with heroin. He had drug problems. He had alcohol problems. So it just made sense. He'd try it one time.
I guess I'll leave that part in the podcast. Paul Wilburn, we have done run the whole gamut here, as it were. The Everlasting Life of Charlie Wall is out now.
Out now.
In a bookstore near you, and I'm sure it's on Amazon if you choose to go that way. You can go to stpetersburgpress.com, of course. You can go to wilburnwrites.com, which is Paul's website, and find out all about this stuff. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
You were here just, what was it, a month ago with
the dancers, talking about Helen and Lauren.
Yeah. And you said, you know, I want to come. I'd love to come back and talk about this book. And I said, well, it's a date, of course. And now that I've read it, I mean, I couldn't be happier. And thank you again for coming in.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks,
Lauren. And happy birthday to Mrs. Wilburn. I guess it was this week.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Okay.
Yesterday.
We're talking on Tuesday, folks, so it was yesterday. Yeah. She's back from
India. She's been 6 weeks in India.
India.
Shooting a film, and we don't know when it's going to come out, but she's been busy again, so it's good.
She's doing – what was it? She's doing readings. Is that the Oxford Exchange?
She's going to – talking about? Often when I do book talks and I – you know, you go to a book talk, I get bored. The author talks and then he reads.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a professional actress reading some sections from the book. Usually she's going to read at the Oxford Exchange. So
– oh, cool.
You don't hear me talking the whole time.
My favorite character was Katrina, and I think you said she was also in Cigar City.
She was in Cigar City.
Uh-huh.
I love bringing her back and seeing where she – goes, you know.
Well, Toledo, I think, wouldn't it?
Dayton.
Okay. Paul Wilburn, thank you again. Good talking to you, pal.
Thanks, buddy.